This special edition of Midori House was first broadcast on the 13th of October 2015 on Monocle 24.
Welcome to a special edition of Midori House, coming to you live from the 13th edition of the Frieze Art Fair in London's Regent Park. I'm Robert Bound. On today's show, we'll be dipping our toe into the fast-flowing waters of contemporary art with Charlotte Burns from the Art Newspaper. We'll be advised by Lisa Schiff on what we should keep our beady eyes on at this year's fair, as well as speaking to gallerist Maureen Paley about what's in her booth. And we'll take a breather outside with a walk around the Frieze Sculpture Park with curator Claire Lilly.
What I try to do is to make something which is a kind of little journey that's really surprising and delightful and confounding, all those things.
That's all coming up in the next half hour here on a special edition of Midori House, beaming to you all the way from London's Regent's Park this fine, brisk autumn evening. And here we are, live from the Reading Room at Frieze London in Regent's Park. And it is a brisk evening, and it's a bit of a rebrand for the Reading Room. It's kind of cool and dark with a white roof. It's slightly different. Why don't we bring in our first guest, Charlotte Burns, who it says here is a US News Market and Business Editor at the Art Newspaper. Charlie, how are you doing?
Very well, thanks, Rob. How are you?
Very well, congratulations. We should put that out on the airwaves. We should get that out
yeah,
there.
Publicise
the bump. Why don't we do that?
Why not?
It's good. It's one of the nicest things I've seen all day, I think.
Art fair
or none. So let's crack down straight to it and talk about some of the pieces here, some of the booths, and maybe some of the trends here at Frieze London. We should tell our listeners that Frieze London is what used to be the Frieze Art Fair, the good old traditional contemporary Frieze Art Fair, Frieze Masters. It's sexy, but old-fashioned cousin is just up the park. So we're basically talking about contemporary art today. Do you notice anything sort of trend-wise on the walls? Sometimes we say that, you know, when times are good, people get very experimental. When times are bad, people get a bit more conservative with what they put on their booths. What do you see before you, Charlotte?
I think that what we've begun to see in art fairs in general is that dealers are much more practiced now in taking part in art fairs, and they're much more aware of what to show and where. So you'll see a different kind of art in Miami Beach than you'll see in Frieze London. And they're both contemporary fairs, largely. Miami has a modern element too. But it really depends on your audience. And in London, you know, this fair started off as a cutting edge fair. It was part of the whole YBA, you know, London's cool culture happening here, Tate Modern being built. That all seems like quite a long time ago now because we're
seems
sort of
like
established.
A Vanity Fair cover with Liam Gallagher on the cover. It seems like a while ago.
I'm Patsy Kensit.
Yeah, exactly.
In bed.
Oh, yeah.
So that seems a while ago. I think they're divorced. In fact, I think he's been divorced again. So now instead we're looking at a more established fair. It's contemporary, slightly less cutting edge, perhaps less experimental, because the dealers now know that they need to make money when they come to art fairs. So they're less inclined to bring, you know, very sort of scrappy booths that show lots of thoughtful ideas and don't translate into cash because these fairs are expensive to do. So we always see, you know, paintings predominantly, and we see sculptures much more than we see, you know, Fluxus artists, for example.
Video, less performance. I mean, I know performance was a touch word on everyone's lips last year at Frieze. In fact, there are lots of sort of performative interventions in various things and booths doing pure performance. Here, it kind of feels a little bit more traditional this year. Is that fair?
I think so. I think that's fair to say. I think there's an ongoing conversation about performance that people are having. Museums are starting to eye up performance in a more serious way than they had been. So, you know, definitely it's something that dealers are thinking about, and artists are working in a variety of media. But art fairs simply work better for two-dimensional works quite often with, you know, some sculpture as well. They tend to do better than, you know, people don't really have the time to sit down and watch, you know, a very complicated, you know, video film work for half an hour in an art fair. You sort of have to grab attention, and people have figured out how to do that best now.
And so is that what we see? We see works, we see booths full of works that have a bit like reading a magazine in a way. There are two speeds of reading. There's the stuff that splashes in your face and kind of pulls you in, and then there's the stuff that perhaps rewards greater kind the time and effort.
Exactly, and all of the dealers have their own way of doing things, so some people are very good at having very pared down booths that allow you a moment of sort of stillness, and other dealers have, you know, crammed theirs to the rafters with, you know, as much as they can. So it really depends. There's some great displays out there. Hauser & Wirth has a particularly nice sculpture display.
It's
really fantastic. They basically have a series that the entire booth has been taken over by uniformly placed white plinths with sculptures on top, and they range from, you know, a Paul McCartney butt plug to a Christoph Schlingensief Last Supper. So really varied.
I really like the octopus tentacle.
I like the octopus tentacle as well.
I kind of want to cut it into bits.
Yeah.
And take it home.
And I like the Mary Harman chair.
Yeah.
Which, you know, we've been seeing in New York on the Mary Harman chairs on the roof of the Whitney.
So this is an interesting thing. It's just stopping at the Hauser & Wirth stand for a minute. It's what do we make of that in the way that that's put together? Because that seems kind of like quite an experimental idea, kind of chopping your booth up into lots of different pieces. But actually, it's a very commercial thing to do. It's look at all the things we've got for sale.
I think it is and it isn't, because sculpture traditionally is a little bit harder to shift than painting.
Right.
Because you know, everyone knows where to put a painting is on a wall, whereas if
where do you put a butt plug?
Where do you put a butt plug? I mean, you know.
Charlotte Burns, you said it. I don't know, where do we get our guests from? I'm looking at my producer Holly over here. We're all blushes.
So, that's a slightly harder decision. also, the thing with Hauser & Wirth stand too is that how do you man that? You know, if you have this grid, how do you place your staff so that they can get to the clients in time? You know, do you want your clients to find you maze-like?
Yes.
And I know that the staff had been having a discussion about that, like how they would actually get around, because you have to be careful of not knocking them over, because you don't want your sculptures to fall.
And presumably staff, the sales staff, have almost like an ordnance survey grid reference for each work, so it's like I like CD, I like C6 or something. It's like battleships, presumably.
I think it must have been. I don't know how you do it. Like, I just went to the stand right now to have a quick look, and it's absolutely jam-packed, and the sales staff, I thought, well, are they trapped in the middle? Do they get to get out? Are they? I don't know how it works. You're just so busy. Do you just ever get out of this grid?
Perhaps it works.
Yeah.
And we introduced you, and you do have markets in your job title, Charlotte. I know, obviously, you're putting together tomorrow's art newspaper, especially built and designed for Frieze. What might be somewhere near the front page of that newspaper in terms of sales, in terms of trends?
We are looking at a few things. We've already done one issue of the Fair paper. So in that issue, we looked at... Actually, a few things are over in Frieze Masters. We have in the paper. We're also going to be looking at... We haven't really decided.
You haven't done it yet.
Decided.
Or you're not going to tell me.
Well, I can't decide
press,
what I'm going to write about. Basically, I was thinking of writing about Korean art, because there's quite a lot of that around.
Yeah, there is.
Or I was thinking of writing about religion then and now, because there's a lot of religious art in Frieze Masters.
Yeah.
So I was wondering what contemporary artists do with religion these days. Is it ironic? Is it sincere? Is it even here? I'm not really sure. So I'm on the lookout for that.
Okay, so it's interesting. If some of that medieval, some of that ancient, actual proper religious art at Frieze Masters is mirrored in a kind of ironic way here.
That's
at
what
contemporary
I was wondering.
Art Fair.
Yeah.
That's a good story.
I don't know.
We'll have to read it. We'll read all about it tomorrow.
You'll have to tell me
if Charlotte Burns deigns to write that story, of course, in the first instance. And finally, you did have a picture on your iPhone that you showed me before we went on air. Tell us about that piece, because we're going to go to Frieze Masters. We're live from Frieze Masters tomorrow. Tell
great.
Us about that piece and prep.
Well, Frieze Masters is lovely as always, and Sam Fogg has a terrific booth. And one of the things on there, when you walk straight in the entrance, it's on your right hand, on your left hand side. It's a massive scroll. It must be 6 feet long. It's basically a late Gothic Kickstarter. Rouen Cathedral spiral burnt down, and in around 1516 there was a competition to build a new one. And so an architect sort of drew the scheme, and then a sort of illustrator, I think, came in and drew all the sculptures. And they basically took this scroll around saying to the wealthy bishops, will you give us some money to build this? And it's gorgeous, and it's just kind of funny too that this is a late Gothic fundraising.
I kind of love that.
Yeah.
I
a
love
scroll.
That.
Sort of like, I don't know. I don't even know what the equivalent would be.
It's like
now.
A medieval Kickstarter.
Yeah.
I think we're all with you on that.
Great.
And there shall be, and that sound of thundering hooves you hear in the background is everyone running up the park to Frieze Masters to get their hands on this medieval Kickstarter.
It's pretty great.
Scroll, as recommended by Charlotte Burns. That's the one artwork you're allowed. It's the Desert Island Disc School of Choosing
okay.
Things. You've shot your bolt.
I'll take
Thank
it.
You very much for your time. Charlotte
Thank
Burns
you very much
from
for
the
having
Art
me.
Newspaper. Congratulations again on the bump. Up next, we're going to be speaking to art advisor Lisa Schiff. And the hubbub you can hear around you is the sound of Frieze London in Regent's Park. And today the fair is buzzing with people wandering the booths, taking note of the pieces they might want to add to their collections and making deals. And one of the people who's helping to make those decisions is art advisor Lisa Schiff. And I'm very happy to get a few insider tips from Lisa. Welcome to the programme.
And thanks for coming. You're racing.
I am racing in.
Today is presumably one of the big days of your year, one of the maybe three or four big days of the year. How on earth do you prepare for something like this? Is this all frantic text messaging before you enter into the fair? Do you know what people want? Do you know what you want? How much do you know of what's on the walls is going to be on the walls?
Well, we do the best we can. I have a team working with me, so we spend as much time as possible gathering previews, understanding that not everything goes on the preview. So we pull all that information together, we go through it. It's very time consuming.
Does it involve spreadsheets? Are you an Excel kind of person, or are you a back of the envelope kind of girl?
I'm a back of the envelope kind of girl, but my team are Excel spreadsheets. So they have
the
spreadsheets.
Proper tools. Okay.
I have no idea what's going on. They say go this way and that way, and it should be fine.
And I mean, it's one of those funny things. Obviously, you working with some of your clients, you've got your own taste, then you have their taste.
Yeah.
Who wins? Is it a bit of a tug of war? Do you have to come? But this is beautiful. When you're working on behalf of somebody else. How much does your own taste, your own judgment kind of come into it?
I mean, I think because I don't work for one person and we have like a dozen really serious collectors that we work with, it's taken me a long time to actually notice when I'm interjecting my own opinion. I have an opinion, but then my own aesthetic, I should say. And it's taken me a long time to learn it's not about me, unfortunately. I'd like it to be about me.
But
I don't share the same taste with a lot of my clients, so trying to just get into their head and figure out what would be the right thing for their collection, like how can I ameliorate their collection, how can I embellish it, what can I get that's going to make them happy, that's also what I think is the best, even if it's not something I would hang in my own house.
Okay. And you said serious collectors. We're very used to using this kind of phrase, serious collectors. Are they serious people? Well, that's the thing. Are they very serious about their art buying, do they walk around and they're like a kid in a candy store or a bull in a china shop? Choose the least offensive one of those that you wish to take. But do they need pointing in the right direction, or are they kind of like, oh my God, look at this thing, and they're tugging you by the arm and wanting to know maybe a little bit of backstory about some of the pieces that they obviously really like?
Every collector is so different in what their needs are and how they function, and some people would like to never come to an art fair ever. Those are my favorite kinds, because walking a fair with a lot of clients it's really hard. It's easier for me to kind of run around, because you're kind of running from point A to point B to point C as fast as you can, and it's easier for me to do it without actually trying to juggle different people. And because we work with more than one person, that's where it gets very tricky at art fairs. But they're all so different in how they work and what their needs are. By serious, I mean we have also like younger collectors, and it's not that they're not serious, they just don't spend as much. And so they're very serious, and I actually love those clients. I mean, they're hard clients to take on, because just to be completely blunt, we don't make very much money from working with them, but it's also a labor of love, and it keeps us engaged in the young market. And so we work really hard for them too. I don't particularly work on those because I can't afford to. I need to work on the bigger, heavy hitters. And it just, they're collectors who spend more money but also are building pretty vast collections that are museum trustees and or building their own foundations, and those are the collectors we really have to focus on.
And the younger collectors, you know, are kind of your labors of love, as you've said. Do they collect younger artists themselves? Is there quite a correlation between the age of the artist, the seriousness, in inverted commas, of the collector, and the kind of stuff that ends up on their walls?
Well, it's really just a price point entry place. It's not so much that maybe they're young and they don't have enough money, but when you're first starting, you start on the younger end and try to get your feet wet. We aren't really trained in doing old masters, which I would love to train myself in more, which I'm working on, having done
doctorate in art history.
Okay.
I do have some background in that, but I just don't know that marketplace. And I would love to, because I think there is an entry point there at a low number. I just really feel like I need to wrap my head around it before I start dabbling in that.
It's an interesting thing. Do you think that market, actually, the old master's market, as we're kind of always at Frieze nowadays, in the last 3 or 4 years, kind of on the cusp of the ancient and the modern, or the ancient and the contemporary, do you think that market behaves in a very different way? Do you think that is kind of
Absolutely.
A little bit more that is back of a fag packet calculations, rather than what is quite slick seen now in contemporary art?
I think a lot of people are feeling the same way. You know, you always think, oh, I'm onto something new, but then you realize it's just something that's happening everywhere. I think for a while there's been like a bit of a nervous tick about the young market, and a lot of people look at Frieze Masters, for example. I mean, that's just a phenomenon in and of itself, and a lot of young galleries are looking backward to, you know, unearth that one person from 50 years ago that they can bring in at a low price point but build up historically. So I feel like there's a huge turn in that direction.
And finally, what have you been excited about since you've been walking around, not on behalf of your clients? What's going to be hanging on in the Schiff living room come sort of Saturday evening?
I think I would have stopped in the first two gallery spaces.
I
would have bought
in
the Glen Brown sculpture in the front with like 10 Glen Brown drawings, which I was really blown away by. And then I would have gone over to Sadie Cole's, and I probably would have bought everything in the booth, particularly the Laura Owens, the Darren Bader, and the Sarah Lucas, who I think is just such a tremendous artist. But I have to say, she curated such a beautiful booth. Shannon Ebner looked so stunning next to those artists with Elizabeth Payton, and it was really, just both of those looked like incredible.
All right, it's all round to yours at the party. We'll try not to break anything, Lisa. Thanks for having us. That was Lisa Schiff, Art Advisor. Stick around, because after the break, we'll be taking a tour of the Frieze Sculpture Park, and then next, it's Maureen Paley.
Immerse yourself in the world of Monocle. Visit monocle.com. Listen live to our radio station, Monocle 24, or explore more than 5,000 hours of audio, every minute of every show we've broadcast since we launched. And don't forget that we have over 400 films to watch and share, while magazine subscribers can log in and browse our complete print archive on screen. Our online shop is here too, which you'll find well stocked with clothing, books, travel accessories, fragrances, homewares, and more. Check into monocle.com every day for fresh news and opinion from our editors and bureau around the globe. Then plan a trip to one of those spots for business or pleasure with our handy city and resort guides. It's all there for you at monocle.com. What are you waiting for?
And welcome back to Midori House, coming to you live from the Frieze Art Fair here in the heart of London, Regent's Park to be precise. I'm Robert Band. We're going to nip outside now. Earlier on today, producer Holly Fisher headed into the wilderness of Regent's Park with Claire Lilly, curator of the Frieze Sculpture Park, now in its fourth year. The exhibition sits in the English Gardens and is free to roam around for Frieze attendees, dog walkers, joggers, you name it, any might fancy a wander. Here's Claire and Holly on a sunny, sunny, but slightly blustery day.
This is a really amazing piece, and it's one of the fantastic things about Frieze, because you get things presented to you that you frankly know absolutely nothing about. Then you have to go and do a little bit of research and look at them and decide whether or not you want to include them in the sculpture park. To be honest, this one, as soon as I saw the image, I just said yes, because I've never seen anything like it. It's around about an 11th century pre-Ekoi monolith. It's from southeast Nigeria. And these were monoliths that were placed around the villages, and they were said to contain the spirits of ancestors. It's a really, really beautiful piece. It's about just over 2 metres high. It's a river boulder, so it's been smoothed by the river. It's from the Cross River region of Nigeria. And it's just been carved using metal or stone tools to resemble a face and what appears to be some fertility arrangement around the sculpture, and it's just a very beautiful thing and connects with all sorts of other works in the sculpture park. There's a William Turnbull here which has also got that sense of a work made from prehistory, so a really amazing find.
And do you have to think about how the sculptures relate to each other, or do you go for very different things?
Honestly, I don't really think about how they're going to work together, because this is a really magnificent garden. I mean, it's a really superb bit of landscaping, and you can pretty well do anything here. So there are some really lovely intimate spaces. There are very wide open spaces. I need a couple of works each year that anchor the exhibition. And that's very important. So you have a sense of kind of solidity around it. And then I can work around those two anchor points. And I suppose this year, the anchor points are a Tony Cragg white marble sculpture right at the beginning of the exhibition, and a really extraordinary and very rare work by Richard Serra from 1976-77. And that's the kind of centre of the exhibition.
And how do you work with Regent's Park to decide where you're going to put these sculptures?
Well, we're given the English gardens to work with, and essentially I just work with the spaces and figure out how sculptures are going to work in those spaces. And it's one of the most important things about siting work out of doors is the context. So how a sculpture works in relation to the size of a tree, how it works in relation to the openness of a piece of landscape. But I'm also very, very thoughtful of who uses this park. And this is a park used every day by thousands of Londoners, thousands of people who are coming through. It's used by mums with their babies and small children. It's used by teachers with groups of children, by joggers, by tourists who are coming through on their way through to London Zoo, and also, of course, people who live just around the park. So I really think about how they use it. And what I try to do is to make something which is a kind of little journey that's really surprising and delightful and confounding, all those things.
Well, should we go and have a look at some of the other works? Sounds a little bit like a purring cat.
It's a really fantastic piece by a young artist called Harun Mirza, and it's called A Solar Symphony. And what we're looking at is a really beautiful piece of black stone, which has these kind of electric pieces of quartz running through it. So you get a sense of almost lightning within the stone. So imagine a stone monolith. And attached to it is a panel of photovoltaic cells, and also running around this piece of the sculpture and a smaller piece of stone are LED lights, and as you can hear, some speakers. So what you're actually listening to is the sound of the sun passing. This is a sculpture called Lock by Richard Serra, who I think arguably is one of the most important sculptors working in the world today. It's a very rare piece because it was made in 1976 for a museum exhibition in New York and then went into a private collection and hasn't been seen since. So this is a really amazing opportunity to see this work. Richard Serra is an artist who works with sculpture, looks at how sculptures stand, how gravity acts on them. He's very concerned about the material of the sculpture. And this particular piece is 50 feet long, and it's two slabs of steel, rusted steel, which are sort of slightly joined in the middle. And that's the sense of a lock, as in a lock in a canal. It's a piece that just slices through this garden and divides the space up, and is a really very beautiful and very elegant sculpture.
And we're back. That was Claire Lilly, curator of this year's Frieze Sculpture Park. Well worth a walk around whether you're attending Frieze this year or not. You can just turn up to that one. My final guest today is one of this year's exhibitors, Maureen Paley, who's headed west across London from her usual gallery spot in Bethnal Green. Maureen, welcome to the programme.
Thank you so much.
And lovely to have you here after the few years that we've been doing our radio show from Frieze, but one of the stalwarts of the art fair from the very beginning. We should really say thank you for having us.
Pleasure.
Now, first things first, we were talking about it while that tape was playing of Claire Lilly walking us around the sculpture park. We were talking about how on earth you decide to put a booth together when your gallery, as we said, is a few miles east of here, but nonetheless in the capital city. How do you decide which bits to bring and show to the Frieze faithful?
Well, it's something interesting about putting the stand together, where it's a bit like a rubric cube or a puzzle. And I think that, especially when you're having a solo show in the gallery, and we opened our Liam Gillick show last night, it's quite interesting to maybe mix and bring together a variety of gallery artists and try to some extent, and I know the word is overused, like curating, but sort of arrange a stand so that you're giving a sense of like continuity between a variety of gallery artists. So often there are mainstays and people that I'm like working with over time, like Wolfgang Tillmans, people like Gillian Waring, people like Rebecca Warren, where we want to show progression in the work and want to make sure that that work is actually seen often in a new way. Because the interesting thing is my artists are showing abroad and showing in this country together with other people that they might be put in context with. But then establishing the context of the gallery is sometimes creating juxtapositions that you don't associate with them.
Yeah, you want to be, as I did when I walked around your booth, knowing which artists you have in your stable, but then going, oh, right, yeah, I forgot. You know, and seeing Wolfgang Tillmans next to Gillian Waring. I really liked Anne Hardy's sculpture, Pitch.
Yes.
Because that's something that really draws you in and kind of almost you want to crawl inside it, which, and it's a sort of wooden shackle. It was like a gypsy caravan almost,
yes,
right?
Indeed.
So it kind of shows the breadth of the gallery's thought processes, presumably. And there must be a bit of killing your darlings with it as well, so it must be a tough process a week before freeze.
Well, it's always complicated, and you're wanting to make sure that you're giving everyone exposure that deserves it and should have it. It's hard to make decisions, but often it's really like I say, a sense of establishing that continuity. With Anne Hardy, she had a show that was at the Common Guild, and she was showing a sculptural aspect of her work there that we thought was very, very exciting. That show had done well. She's about to open a show in November that's going to be at Modern Art Oxford. And the emphasis in her work that's audio and also is sculptural is coming out of things that had interested her when she was working mainly photographically. And we thought that this fair was a chance to, just before that show opened, give a sense of preview.
And just finally, while we still have, I think we've got a minute of time, Maureen, it's one of those things, how often do you get to go and wander around and see other people? I mean, it's a small world, presumably the gallery world in London. I presume it's a place, it's all about having conversations, isn't it? How many good conversations do you have during Freeze Week? This one aside.
Okay. Well, I would say that colleagues came by to the gallery yesterday, and many colleagues came by to Liam Gillick's opening and party last night. And one of the great things is I have great admiration for Polly Staple, who's running Chisenhale. I really am very, very admiring of a number of people who are working on things with publications, people who are actually interested in the arts beyond collecting. And so it's an opportunity for me to see them in a completely different light, but to see them all at once. And I think that this opportunity now, speaking to you, is what we're trying to do. We're trying to communicate, and the fair gives you a chance to kind of catch people that you might not be seeing when you're sitting in your gallery every day.
Yeah, it seems like everyone's equal under the freeze tent, actually. Maureen Paley, thank you very much indeed for your time. Time to scoot back off. I hear the champagne corks popping at your booth. You better get back and join them. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
That's all we've got time for on today's Midori House. Thanks to all my guests here at Freeze London. If you listen carefully, you'll hear the popping of the champagne bottles. I think I just said that, and then this bit's a script. Today's show was produced by Holly Fisher, researched by Eugenia Elenskaya, and engineered by Bill Lutie. Back in the studio, of course, it was Chris Chilvers. We'll be back at the same time, 1800 hours tomorrow. For the time being, from me, Robert Bound, from the Freeze Art Fair in Regent's Park. Thank you very much for tuning in.